Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everybody. It is Thursday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Back for our weekly Zeiss is Right video with Paul Zeiss, Post-Gazette sports columnist. We're talking a potential big Steelers move at wide receiver. Some smoke around Brandon Ayuk from the 49ers. Maybe a little bit of smoke around Odell Beckham Jr. We're going to sort through all of it with Paul. We're also going to talk a little bit about the Pitt basketball snub of the NCAA tournament. What happened there? Paul, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today, Adam?
I'm hanging in there. You and I are both heading down to the arena here in a little bit to catch the March Madness game. It's going to be a long day, but you know these are the days we live for in this job, right, is getting to spend a full day of basketball down at the arena.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the NCAA tournament coming to Pittsburgh is really, really cool. It's pretty cool when you're downtown. You see all the different fans from everywhere else, and of course, you get to sit and watch basketball all afternoon and all evening. So I'm looking forward to it. I look forward to it every time.
Yeah, absolutely. But we got some Steelers to talk about first. Before we get started, just want to remind you our primary sponsor for this episode and every episode of the Zeiss is Right show here on the Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel is Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Paul, our own Jerry Dulac has lent some smoke to the Brandon Ayuk rumors, a potential sign-and-trade situation with the 49ers. He said that there's a chance. Deebo Samuel, Justin Jefferson have been other names that have come up to a lesser degree. Do you like that kind of move for a potential number two receiver for the Steelers? Or do some of the names in the draft maybe intrigue you more? Brian Thomas, Adonai Mitchell. We've heard they met extensively with Xavier Worthy this week. How are you looking at where they go at wide receiver here?
Well, I have to see what the package is for Brandon Ayuk. One thing I will say, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, well, why would you trade a first-round pick? Then you're going to have to pay him as opposed to just drafting a guy in the first round. And I would say this, it's because you know Brandon Ayuk can play in the NFL. That's why. You know that Deebo Samuel can play in the NFL. And, you know, whatever the – you know, scouting and projection is for every one of these players, you know, from Marvin Harrison Jr. down to whoever is receiver 50, it's still, there's a degree of guesswork. That's the thing. The Steelers need to get a guy that they know knows how to play. And here's the other thing. There's nothing that says they can't trade for one and draft one. There's no rule that says they can't do that. And if they did that, I would love that, actually, because then all of a sudden your receiving core looks completely different than it has. Then all of a sudden you've got, you know, depending on what you think of Calvin Austin and who's the guy they just signed, Van Jefferson, you know, those guys are filling the back end of your, you know, receiver group. But if you've got George Pickens and you've got somebody like, I don't know, Ayuk, and then you've got a rookie that's comes with a you know high pedigree. Now all of a sudden you and I might stop talking about receivers every week.
Yeah, I mean that's one of our favorite topics here on this show. If you're a longtime viewer, you know that. Paul is a big move at wide receiver the thing that could make this an A-plus kind of free agency period in your mind? I'm not going to say offseason because I think we still need to see what happens in the draft, but at least in that portion, are you giving them an A-plus regardless of whether they bring in another offensive lineman, another cornerback here in the next couple of weeks?
Well, to get an A-plus, they would have to bring in a receiver and at least one lineman. You know, whether it's a tackle or a center, they have to bring in a guy. I just think it's unrealistic to try and hit on two guys in the draft that are going to be plug and play, ready to go as rookies. So, to me, you know, if they go out and they sign a tackle that is better than Chukwuma Okorafor was or better than Dan Moore Jr., you know, which that's a pretty low bar to achieve. If they upgrade at tackle, I might give them an A. I don't know if I can go A+. If they get a center, a tackle, and a corner, and a receiver, yeah, then we can go A+. But to me, they have to get a receiver, and they have to get at least one more lineman for this to really, truly be as successful as I think it should be.
Is your logic there the same with center and tackle and corner, the same as it is with receiver, where if you're signing a guy in free agency, you're probably signing a guy you know can play, or at least more likely you're signing a guy you know can play? Because I kind of look at what's available to some of these positions and saying, if the Steelers actually draft some of these guys, I think that satisfies the need as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's just unrealistic for me, you know, to hit on four rookies, basically. That's, you know, to me, you want to take your chances of needing a rookie to achieve. You want to, you know, shrink that to, you know, two positions as opposed to four. So I just think that you got to go out and get at least two more players, a receiver. And alignment seem to be the most logical, because I feel like if you draft another tackle like Broderick Jones real early, like say they move up a little bit for a tackle, you might be able to find a plug and play guy. And then, you know, corners are interesting players, because we've seen corners get drafted later, you know, that turn out to be pretty good players. I think you can find corners in the draft. Even though the Steelers have been terrible at it, but that was a different regime. So I feel like, you know, they need a lot of receivers. They only need one corner. They need one tackle. They need one center. So you need to do a situation of where you sign a receiver and then you draft one, maybe in the second or third round, but you draft one and then you sign either a center or a tackle, and then you draft the other and draft a corner, because you only need one player at those positions. So to me, if they go into the draft with really only two glaring positions of need, that to me is it means they've done a really hell of a job in this first part of the offseason.
If they get an Ayuk, you know, in a trade, sign and trade, if they get, you know, a Justin Jefferson, potentially Debo Samuel, how high would you draft that receiver? Would you say, because there's good guys available on day two, there's good, you know, some solid guys potentially available even into the fourth round. You know, do you grab one of those guys maybe a little bit later on and beef up at, you know, offensive line at corner first, kind of make those the priorities? Or do you look at these Brian Thomas types and say, man, if you can get three of those guys on the field together, it's going to be really hard to defend this offense?
I would actually say, Adam, even if you draft a receiver, everything is on the table for me. I mean, it's a position of such need that if you are able to get one of the best guys off the board, you know what? You take them and you figure out something else at one of the other positions, because I think you can get a good corner on the second day. You know, I would likely, if I were king of the world, I would likely try and take a swing at one of the three big name receivers we're talking about. And even Stephon Diggs, I think, is available if someone wants to make the right kind of deal. But go get one of those guys. I would say draft. I would say go get one of those guys, sign a center, draft a tackle, and draft a corner, and then draft a receiver. Those would be the first three picks off the board if it were me. Regardless, I think you take the tackle. I would even think about trying to move up to take a tackle if the right guy was available.
Yeah, and if they start flying off the board, you know, the tackle class isn't super deep, at least in terms of guys you can plug and play. I think there's a list of maybe six, right? And so if they start going off the board, then you're maybe potentially going to have to make a move if you really want to upgrade there or have a chance to upgrade there pretty immediately. Paul, what do you make of Mike Florio's suggestion from Pro Football Talk that he thinks a deal with Odell Beckham could come together? Is he the type of guy at this stage of his career that you have any interest in? I think around Steelers, some Steelers circles, there's a lot of people that say, man, he's washed up. He's been washed up for years. And others that say, you know, he was making plays in Super Bowls not that long ago.
Yeah, I would have very little interest in that at all, unless it was – you know, he's coming in as their fourth or fifth guy, which he's not going to want to do. To me, I just think he's done. You know, he showed very little to me last year with the Ravens. He had, you know, a couple of moments here and there. But to me, he's done. I'm not sure why you even go that route. Why waste any of your money and any of your cap space and anything, like, why waste it on a guy who probably is not going to help you that much?
Yeah, I think I'm there with you, Paul. I mean, maybe if he's still available midseason, as he's been the last couple of years at times, and you have an injury, you know, maybe I could see him being a fit here down the stretch. But I think at this stage, you're better off with what you've got. And potentially some of these younger guys that you could bring in. So I'm there with you, but I figured it was at least worth asking about, because that's a big name they've been tied to. Paul, I want to get into some Kenny Pickett talk briefly here. Do you think he has been slandered, for lack of a better term, here in the past week, piled on? Or does that go with the territory of just being a first-round flameout regardless of where you went to school? I kind of look at it and say, yeah, it didn't work out. I think a lot of his critics had valid criticisms, but it does feel like it got oddly personal here this week for a guy who's done a lot of great things in Pittsburgh, and not just in a Pitt uniform. I think, to you know, that night, Christmas Eve against the Raiders, that touchdown pass. I mean, that as a moment, that was a cool thing. Did it portend him becoming a great quarterback in the city? No, but given everything that had happened with Franco Harris and you know, just the vibes around the franchise that weekend, that was kind of a special moment. In some ways, it feels like it's been a little too much on his way out.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I mean, it has gotten personal in some ways. But by the same token, I mean, he didn't really handle things the right way. He didn't handle things very well down the stretch. I felt like the moment that he probably lost a little bit of credibility was when he was asked about, you know, whether or not he learned anything by, you know, watching the game, standing on the sidelines, and he gave like a real terse no, you know, and then he was really kind of just sort of in a bad, mood, where if you looked at him on the sidelines, he wasn't cheering for, you know, his team. He wasn't ever, you know, he always had that little scowl on his face. It just, unfortunately for him, when you're the first round quarterback and you're from Pitt and you're a guy we're very familiar with, his popularity went through the roof when he first got drafted. His popularity, you know, went through the roof when, was it Mitch Trubisky flamed out against the Jets and they, you know, Kenny, they're yelling and he comes in. And so everything he did was scrutinized a little bit more than anybody else. And I don't know that he really recognized that, because I thought the way he handled the end of last season and then the off season and then not talking to the media after the season, you know, I thought the way that he handled things at the end suggested that some of the criticisms of it, of him, which again, some of them have gotten way over the top, but some of the criticisms of him that maybe he wasn't the great team, greatest teammate in the world, and that maybe he wasn't the most mature guy in the world. You know, some of those criticisms seem valid to me. Do we need to bury him? No, we don't need to bury him like that anymore. And, you know, unfortunately for him, it didn't work out here. The hope is he goes somewhere else for a couple of years, sits behind Jalen Hurts, maybe, you know, gets another opportunity somewhere else to be a starter, and he handles it a little bit better. And then people kind of forget his 2 years with the Steelers, and people in Pittsburgh's impression of him, you know, goes back to the fake slide and winning the ACC championship for Pitt, and all the good feelings that we have against it, you know, we had against him, but or had for him. And then the other thing is, I'll tell you, Adam, the Raiders game probably is the signature moment, right? Given all that was riding on that game from the standpoint of, you know, Franco Harris's day. Franco died, 2 days earlier or 3 days earlier or whatever it was. There were ceremonies. There was, you know, people from the players from the 70s and 80s and 90s. And, you know, there was all kinds of people in town. There were, you know, they brought in guys like, what was his name? Phil Villapiano for the Raiders. I mean, it was like a big deal. And it was almost like, okay, there's no way they can lose this game. And Kenny actually delivered at the end to win that game. And then the next week, then he did the same thing the next week against the Ravens. And that 2 week stretch will always be, you know, if you want good vibes or good positive thoughts about Kenny Pickett in Pittsburgh, those two things probably are his signature moments. But he didn't handle the exit right. And when you don't handle the exit right, guess what? People tend to pow on. So that's where he's at, I would say. And hopefully now he goes to Philadelphia, sort of recalibrates a little bit, and you know, gets better as a backup, just sort of learns how to handle not being the starter a little better, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm completely with you on all that, Paul. Excuse me. Let's get into the what happened to Pitt this week. Before we do, just want to thank Pitt Johnstown, one of our sponsors. It's a Pitt-quality education with up-close and personal learning, a top-ranked Northeast public college by U.S. News & World Report. Generous scholarships and financial aid are available, located on 655 picturesque acres with easy access to the city center, including shopping and dining, a vibrant campus life with an active D2 athlete community. Check out Pitt Johnstown today. Paul, I got a little bit of a bone to pick with some elements of the Pitt fan base and the reaction this week to not getting in. Let me say here at the top that I think that Pitt team that's been out there on the court is a NCAA tournament quality team. I think they could go out there and beat a lot of teams in this tournament. You know, it's not about the eye test for me. The eye test tells me they were good enough to win. The resume was not there for the committee. I don't even want to bury them for the resume that they had. I do want to bury the coach for putting this team in that position with that non-conference schedule. And for, you talked about it on Twitter a little bit. I think you may have written about it a little bit. Canceling the City game for no reason. And when you look back, that is a game that should be on Pitt's schedule on a neutral floor against a team that's in this NCAA tournament that is definitely better than the 345, you know, strength of schedule that they went in with. Would have, in any year, playing Duquesne probably helps. Even a year when Duquesne's not very good. And Jeff Capel has discontinued this game for no good reason, in my opinion. And it ended up coming back to burn him. So whether Pitt deserves to get snubbed from this NCAA tournament, whether you think they should have been in there rather than Virginia or some of these other teams, the TCU at the bottom that we talked about, the bottom line is whether they deserve it analytically, whether they deserve it with the eye test. I think Jeff Capel deserves this spiritually for what he's done. And this is some karmic justice you know, for some of the decisions that he's made, and doesn't he have to face a little bit more scrutiny here than, like, I've seen people on Twitter blaming Joe Lunardi's outside influence on the committee, as if Joe Lunardi is the grand poobah and basically picks who gets into the NCAA tournament, and not the, like, projecting what the committee is going to do. Why are we blaming Joe Lenardi when Jeff Capel's right there?
Well, let me just say a few things. First of all, I think the one argument that Pitt fans could make, because it really feels like this, is that the ACC, that the committee looked and saw there was only four ACC teams and said, okay, we need to put a fifth one in, and just went and looked at the standings, basically, and put Virginia in ahead of Pitt. I don't know that there's any real legitimate argument to put Virginia in ahead of Pitt. That is the one legitimate, valid argument that I think Pitt fans can make, is that if the committee genuinely was just looking to put a fifth ACC team in, they put the wrong team in by just about every single measure. That being said, Pitt was not, to me, I think St. John's and Seton Hall, there were about five, four or five Oklahoma, there were four, five, six other teams that had just as good of a claim as Pitt, if not better. So I didn't get all that upset about, well, they got snubbed. And I didn't think this was like the most egregious snub ever, because I felt like they didn't do quite enough with their resume to get there. Could they have got there? Yeah. And under the scenario I said, if the committee's, if it's simple as the committee was looking for a fifth ACC team, they should have been the fifth team in, you know, and that's just that. But for the city game, the ironic thing, Adam, is if he played the city game last year, he would have been in the final four. I mean, he wouldn't have had to play in the first four. And if he played the city game this year, he'd have been in and might not have had to play in the first four, even though he's even though he was a bubble team right now. I think if you look at the metrics, and Duquesne, well, I think was 82 in the net. You play an 82 in the net on a neutral floor and you win. That's like winning a top 30 game. And you go back and you look at the 343 team they played, and I think they played a 290-something team and a 280-something team all at home. Those games do nothing for you. The thing about the city game that is also built in for you, you're still giving your fans a chance to go see you play, because it's 2 miles away and there's 20,000 seats. So everybody that wants a ticket can get a ticket. You can fit all 12,000 of your fans that want to go, you know, you can fit them all into the arena comfortably. And there'll be 5,000 or 6,000 Duquesne fans. The next thing you know, you got 17,000 if you really need to do it that way. Either way, there's absolutely no reason the game shouldn't be played. It's an ego thing. It was an ego thing between Jeff Capel and Keith D'Ambrosio. And Capel, you know, was, you know, I think early in his career here, he really thought he was at Duke, you know, and I think honestly, it's stuff like not going to the NIT.
Yeah, I think he still acts like he's at Duke with canceling the city game, big time in the NIT. Listen, this is a guy, if you look at his resume, he has not been seated in the main draw of the NCAA tournament since 2009.
Right.
Eight seasons, not since 2009. This Pitt program has not been seated in the main draw of the NCAA tournament for most of a decade.
Well, that's the whole point. I think he's done a good job, and I think he's put the program in a good spot, and I think that they've recovered. But the reality is, in 6 years, he's made one NCAA tournament, and that one as a first four. And that doesn't say that he didn't make it, because he did win. He won a game or two, right? I think he might have won a game or something. But at the end of the day, you know, he's got a lot more to prove and a lot more to do. And I think that decisions like not going to the NIT, what is the point of that? One of the things that bothers me the most, is that 98% of student athletes that are in playing college basketball will never play pro basketball. This is it for them. This is it. This is all of the competitive basketball that they really want to play at a high level. This is it. And you had an opportunity to give them two or three or four more games in their uniform and decided, we decided as a team or this or that. You're the coach. I make it very simple. We're playing. You want to opt out, just like the bowl games? Opt out. We'll play with our walk-ons. But I guarantee you we'll find five, six, seven, eight of you that want to play. and we're going to go play. That's, to me, what student athletes are supposed to be. That's what college athletics was supposed to be about. I don't want to hear this nonsense about how, oh, well, because of roster management and the transfer portal that we can't. Really? You got 40 damn guys on your staff. Have you ever looked, Adam, I want you to do, well, I think they shrink it for the NCAA tournament. I think they allow less coaches. Go to a home game. I went to a Robert Morris home game this year. There was every bit of 20 guys on the bench. And I'm like, what do all these guys do? So you mean to tell me that you don't have two of those guys that can scour the transfer portal for you while you're at practice? I mean, give me a break, will you please? And I laugh because one of the first guys out of the transfer portal that signed with Alabama, who, oh, by the way, is playing this week. Imagine that. The coaches at Alabama figured out how to recruit and get ready for a game all at the same time. I mean, it's all BS. And it's frustrating to me because we are increasingly devaluing the idea of competing and playing. And that's supposed to be the essence of college athletics. So to me, the worst thing that's happening is all this opting out and all this other crap. If you're a first-round pick in the NFL draft, I understand not wanting to go play in the Birmingham Bowl or whatever the hell it is. I get it, okay? I would argue that you're being way overly cautious because the number of guys who have actually lost their entire career in a bowl game, it's like one. But okay, let's go with it because it's the cool thing to do. What happened to wanting to compete and play? If I was a guy on Pitt's team, Jeff Capel and all my teammates, they'd have to fight me. They'd have to fight me to tell me I couldn't go play another game. So that bothers me. As you said, that's kind of out of what I would call that arrogance, I think, a little bit of that Duke arrogance. But to me, listen, his biggest job now is to make sure those two freshman guards come back.
Yeah, that's a job that's got to be done. And just to the NIT point, Paul, I'd say, listen, there is some level of responsibility of the networks here when players can be paid. They want content. That's why, you know, Tom Crean, who rejected an NIT invite, is now on ESPN saying it's ridiculous to reject an NIT invite, right? Like, wants inventory. I think they need to make some structural changes to that stuff. But I agree with you as well. It shouldn't be the only motivation. Go ahead.
Tom Crean didn't reject it. He rejected a home game. They did play in it, but he rejected a home game.
Okay, fair. Yes, fair.
But go ahead.
But yeah, I think that you've got to find a way to make it more attractive for the players in some cases. And if you know, it's content, and if you want people to make content for you, and there's not as much competitive reason as guys in the NCAA tournament, I don't have a problem with you know, in the age of NIL, saying, hey, we'll pay guys to do this, and I know that there's some laws in some places that would prevent that. Let's get that figured out. I think that would make some of these traditional events a lot better. Paul, just any final thoughts on Pitt and the season that they had? I think we've pretty much touched on everything, but I wanted to give you a chance to just wrap up before we sign off here.
No, I think I said it all. I mean, again, they've got a schedule better than they scheduled. And you know what? Don't lose to Missouri. That's the other part of it. But the schedule better than they scheduled. I think West Virginia will be better next year. That'll help them. But go get the city game back.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You can't bellyache about the schedule if you're not going to play the 11 seed down the street. Or at least, you know, Duquesne has a decent team. They're not always great, but it's not like the Danny Nee era here anymore where they don't belong on the same floor as Pitt. And I think that's – it should help them. And it's great for basketball. Paul, I went every year. I went to Penn State. I just love the city game as a basketball event in the city. I'm a basketball guy. We don't get that many events like this in town. And I, you know, I just missed the city game. But Paul, thanks for stopping by. I will see you down at the arena here in a little bit. Great talk. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.